rebel, rebels in the world, stand up. If you're a rebel on the grind, you don't care with your mind, hands up. They can't stop us or hold us back. We that new revolution, I told them that. If you're with it, we ignite the path. All the rebels in the world, stand up. All right, welcome to the very first Culture Rebel podcast. I'm Connie Jacob, and Culture Rebel is a podcast that calls us out of the status quo and settling for that's just the way it is. It's raw or nothing here. And I am so excited to have on my very first podcast, my friend Akeem, who is going to blow your mind. Akeem, he has been nothing but perseverant through so many things. And that's the one thing that describes him. He was born in Save Lamar, Jamaica. I hope I said that right. He grew up around crime, violence, and poverty. And at the age of 7, his parents decided to move to Canada because they wanted to give him a better opportunity to succeed in life. But after they moved here, Akeem and his mom became homeless. They stayed at a bus stop until a friend allowed them to stay in their basement until they got back on their feet. He overcame all the odds to finish high school, graduate from the University of Alabama, and along the way became a 2-time Olympian and 3-time All-American and be Canadian all at the same time. Talk about being a culture rebel. After graduating from university in 2016, Akeem helped Canada win a bronze medal and break the Canadian record in the men's 4x100. And he's going to tell you what that means because I have no idea. He is also the 3rd fastest man in Canada, history to 60. And that's ironic because I happen to be the 3rd slowest in Canada. In 2017, Akeem retired from sport and is now focusing in impacting the world with his words. He's published 2 books. He travels internationally to speak to corporate groups, university, and other various places, and helps them develop a resilient mindset so that they can break through their own battles. It's not about what happens to you. It's what you choose to let the next beyond the point of pain. That's what my friend Akeem says. I am so excited to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here. I didn't know I was 1. That's even more pressure for me.
You are the very first. I wanted you on here because every time I listen to you, you have your own podcast, you have books, I've heard you speak. I wanted you to be first on here because you are the definition of resilience. And wow. I wonder if you could tell everyone a little bit of your story, like where you've come from. I've read it, but could you tell us a bit?
Well, that's a big honor. I really appreciate that, you know, especially being able to come. It's always good when I can come and talk with you personally. The story, you know, for me, I was born in Jamaica, Save Lamar, Jamaica, but I grew up between Westmoreland and Negril. So I spent a lot of time with my grandparents, and I didn't know the definition of poor poverty until I got to Canada. Because to me, we didn't have much, but we always compensated in things like love. You know, so my grandparents, my mom would tell me these stories about my grandfather when I was born. He would just hold me in his hands and he wouldn't get tired. He would just hold me and look at me and smile. And my grandfather was a man who dealt with anger problems. But my mom said, when you were born, it's like something switched, you know. So I learned that things from different from an early time in my life. They used to tell me things like, you know, Akeem, my grandmother used to say, Akeem, you know, it's not what happens to you. It's not what people call you. It's what you respond to. Things like that. So for me, my mom had me when she was 18, 19 years old. You know, I always say I graduated high school twice. Because when she was pregnant with me, she graduated, and then 18 years later, I graduated my own. I think to say it was tough would be an understatement. I saw a lot of death early in my life. One that left me with a speech impediment because I witnessed it when I was 6. So the decision to move to Canada wasn't necessarily by choice. It was a circumstantial decision that my father saw. Look, if Akeem wants to do something here and we want him to succeed, you guys have to leave. And I say you guys because all three of us couldn't go. So for a year straight, he just worked and he 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 saved up and he said, okay, you guys go. And so when we came to Canada, we actually went to Yellowknife, of all places, right?
Why? Okay, wait a second. Like, why Yellowknife?
You know, Connie, I still wonder that to this day. We've had conversations off air about that. But what it came down to was my uncle was based in the army up there. Mm. So, you know, in the 80s, 90s, as long as you had somebody somewhere, you could just go, you know.
That was easy back then.
It was easy. So that was our way into it. And I missed something like 63 days of school because I could not get acclimated to this thing called winter. I just didn't understand why people would want to go to school when it's minus 45, 50.
Why? I understand that question.
I didn't. So for me, you know, I'd say an impact in a different direction in my life started when I got there.
And you and your mom, you know, you were homeless, living at a bus stop. And mm-hmm. What changed? How did you get out of that?
I think the hardest part wasn't exactly the physicality of it. I think humans were very strong and very robust, but I think the parts that hurt us the most is the mental aspect of it. Because sometimes something can happen to us years and decades ago, but we still carry the pain because we haven't dealt with it. And for me, even though I was homeless and going through those times, I always saw something bigger for myself. I just didn't know how it was going to happen. But that didn't mean that I didn't see it for myself. You know, so by the grace of God, my mom and I stayed at a friend's basement. Now, we had only talked to this person, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 times. I went to high school with this person's son. And this person, her name is Sophia. She is now the godmother of both my siblings. And when she took us in, she already had 4 other kids. Like, the house was full. But I think something in her heart said, you know what, if I was in this position, I would want the same thing. You know, so when we got to her place, you know, my mom and I shared a mattress downstairs, literally mattress, sheet, pillows. We didn't really have anything but the clothes on our backs. But Connie, one of the things that always reminded for me, see, I'm a person that I think there's 2 types of pain. I think it's the pain that makes you bitter. And I think it's the pain that inspires you to make a difference. And for me, it was the second, but I always felt the pain because my mom would come in the house and she probably thought that I was sleeping a lot of the times, but I was always awake. One, because you want to make sure that, you know, your parents or whomever it is, people you care about that left the house, that they come back in the house. I think that alone in itself is an underrated blessing. It's a blessing to leave the house and to come back. We can't think like that stuff is guaranteed because it's not. But when she would come in from working, you know, 3 or 4 jobs, you know, I remember for a month straight, she would come in and she would be in tears, crying. And not like the soft, I think there's 3 levels of cries. I think there's the one where it's the emotional, the reaction cry. I think the second layer is pain. But I think the third layer, I think that's heartache. Because you can't breathe. You're in that one, you know, that's why there's tears of joy, you know, and there's tears when, you know, you're in a relationship and you break up. But then there's the tear when someone, you know, passes away or you lose your job or something happens. So the third layer, I heard that for a month straight. Months. This is the time my mom cried for 31 days, not because she didn't think she could get out of it, but because she came here for a better life and my dad said one thing, take care of him. And she felt like she wasn't doing that. But my mom is a very strong lady. She's stronger than she gives herself credit for because she would cry and wake up the next day as if nothing happened and go about her business.
Wow. Wow. And I think when you're saying this, there's people listening who are crying those kinds of cries mm-hmm. and wondering if it's ever going to get better. And how old were you when all this was happening?
13.
Okay. So I call that the vortex of life. Like, I don't know what 13-year-old is doing. Okay. And there you are, you know, worried about your mom, making sure she comes home, hearing her cry. And yet something inside of you tells you that, mm-hmm. no, this is going to be okay. You're able to bounce past this. How does that work, Akeem?
I honestly, at the time, I think the reason why I stayed quiet was because I didn't know how to fix it. You know, I think, for me, I'm always like, okay, what's the problem? Okay, let's analyze the problem. Okay, then let's work on a plan to fix it. But at 13, what I didn't know much. I didn't know how to tell my mom that everything is going to be okay. So I would just pray. It wouldn't be a long prayer. It would just be, Lord, please give us the strength to get through today so we can see tomorrow. And for me, I just knew that her sacrifices, I couldn't let that go without me trying to do something to make the situation better. And that's when I got involved in sport. You see, I think for all the athletes listening to this, especially if you're young, I think I came into the sport not just to have fun. Matter of fact, I probably didn't even think about fun. I thought about how can I use this as a ticket to elevate my life. So for me, while everybody was playing around and, showing up to practice late, and this is throughout my whole career, showing up to practice late, coming in, I was looking at it in the fact of, if I don't dominate this session, then I'm letting the people who invested in me down. So I didn't play with training sessions. You know, there's the saying, the level of mastery is what, 10,000 hours? I hear that all the time. For me, I always felt like I had to get 5,000, 50,000 hours. I was already at a disadvantage. You know, so for me, when people were, I never forget, there was a game when I was playing in high school and there was a whole bunch of recruits there, right? And playing football. And there was some tackles that I felt I should have broke, but I didn't. And I got tackled and we lost the game. And I remember going back home and my mom had just came in from work. This was like 8:30. And she had just came home from work and I had put my stuff in a bag. I packed water and I was getting ready to leave. And she said, Akeem, where are you going? I said, Mom, I got to go to the field. She said, son, it's about to be 9:00. She says, yeah. And I just left and I went. And it may not seem like it was significant for anybody watching, but at 8:35, 9:00, here you had a 15-year-old kid who was running in the dark, who was working on his drills, doing push-ups, doing crunches, pushing myself to the ultimate limit, not because it was something that I had to do. It was something that I knew served a bigger purpose. You know, I think there's a difference between a hard worker and a person who works hard. Mm. A hard worker will work when it's convenient. Anybody can work hard when somebody's watching. That's easy to do. But you're a hard worker, meaning despite the situation that you may face, despite what happens, I'm going to work to the best of my ability until my situation changes. Meaning no matter what happens, I'm going to find a way to continue to work hard. I'm not going to complain. And I'm going to pursue it relentlessly with everything that I have with a positive attitude. And that's where all of that taught me. That's how I handled my track and field career. You know, people would always say, Akeem, you're so lucky and you're so talented. And it kind of annoys me because, one, luck has nothing to do with it. Luck is me. Luck is me walking to go check the mail and I slip on some ice, but I catch myself. I'm like, wow, man, that was lucky. That was lucky. But luck has nothing to do with putting in the hours that most people won't. Because for me, I always knew that when I was asleep, Australia was up. If Australia was up, somebody in Australia is working as I'm sleeping. You know, so for me, my mentality was just different. I'm not, at that time, I wasn't the person who would speak. I don't talk just to talk. You know me, I don't talk just to talk. I'm a person where I'm gonna go put that work in, figure it out, and then I'll analyze, okay, probably should have discussed that a little bit more. But I think more times than none, we talk too much and talk ourselves out of it rather than just going and doing it.
Yeah, I agree. Or we give ourselves permission. Oh, I don't feel good. I'm having a bad mental health day. And not that those aren't real. I mean, I'm sure you had those. I'm sure you had days where you're like, I don't want to get up and go, but you did anyways. And someone like that goes to the Olympics. Mm-hmm. Someone like that lives a dream. Someone like that with purpose. How much does purpose play in to the ability to wake up and do that?
You know, I've been very fortunate that God has shown me that my purpose when I was 20. But at 13, I knew that there was something out there bigger than the sport that I was going to be involved in. Mm-hmm. And it came in small things. Sometimes when you feel like you're called to do something, it's a very quiet voice, but you'll hear it consistently over time. So for me, I would hear things like, you know, Akeem, you're very good with words, or you're a good listener. You know, you give good advice. And I'm just like, you know, you guys could just be saying that. You know what I'm saying? So for me, I just listened. And I started speaking when I was 20. And my first speaking engagement was terrible, absolutely terrible. And I practiced for it. I practiced and I practiced and I practiced and I practiced and I practiced. And I went to go do it. And it didn't go well because I was reading off a paper. Because I had practiced with the paper. I didn't use my stories. And so for me, when I stepped away from track after two Olympics and after the medal, after I had a deal with Puma, things was looking up. You know, I had just signed a deal with Puma. I was getting funded from Athletics Canada. I was getting speaking engagements and things. But, you know, for me, I don't like track as much as I do hearing people succeed in their own way. But I think one of the things that stops us, like you said, we all go through these questionable moments of, why am I doing this? Why should I continue? What's the point? You know, I think sometimes when we embark on something new, we don't see the results on the surface. What I mean by that is sometimes your character has to be able to be at a level where your surface success can meet you at.
Yes.
You know, so for me, every delay and every setback and every moment that I'd be like, man, why am I not getting any gigs? Like, what's going on here? Because when I retired, that was the reality of what it was. It's like, as soon as I took off the sweats of track and field, everybody was just like, man, what does Akeem have to say? I'm the same person. I'm the same person. But I think so many times when we embark on something that we believe is purposeful, we don't see it at the surface level, that we think nothing is happening. Mm-hmm. One question I always get is, Akeem, how do you find your purpose? How do you know? And I always refer it to your gift versus your talents. The difference between a gift and a talent is, a talent has an expiration date. Every athlete, every physical activity, you can't escape Father Time. Mm-hmm. What you could do at 20, when you get to 40, you're not going to be able to do it. You could still probably do it, but not to the level of intensity you once could. But when you find your gift is the one thing that a person can do effortlessly that just comes so natural to you. I've seen some people who can sing out the woodworks, but they're not operating in their gift, you know? And when you find out what your gift is, then you can use your gift and relay that and live your purpose, because God puts a purpose inside all of us and it's tied to our gift.
That's so good. And I feel like there's people listening who are wondering, like, I want to be a culture creator. Mm-hmm. I want to do things that matter. I want to wake up and have the same thing Akeem felt. Like, I'm going to push through the hard stuff, but I don't know what that looks like. And I think you just gave us a really great tool. My favorite Kirk Franklin line is, everybody wants a title, but do you know your name? And do you know who you are? And do you know what you've been put here for? And like you said, you know, like, we celebrate the shiny, we celebrate the Olympian, we celebrate the man in the track and field outfit. Mm-hmm. But when he takes it off, he's still the same man. Mm-hmm. And now you're using your voice. That's where we met. I yes. heard you speak at a school.
Bob Edwards.
And I'm like, who is this guy? Who is this? I like this guy, because you were so raw and real. You were sharing real things with these youth that they need to hear. And you do that with anyone. You're one of those people who can transcend youth, adults, doesn't matter that. Who you're talking to. This is what you tell them. You tell them how to be resilient, how to overcome. And you have a podcast.
Yes.
I really want people to check the podcast out. What's it called?
It's called Unscripted.
Unscripted.
And the reason why it's called Unscripted is, you know, every time I try to read a script, unless I memorize it, it just doesn't go well. So for me, I'm just like, you know, I think so many times when we know we're going on a show and we know we got to do something, we rehearse everything, and it just sounds robotic. And I think this is the reason why our relationship has been able to grow and still be strong to this day, is because when we come in, we talk about authentic and real stuff. I think too many times we talk about fluff. Mm-hmm. How many times have you're walking somewhere and you say, hey, how you doing? And the person just says, good, and they just walk by. Mm-hmm. I think we've gotten too accustomed to this notion of being good is just a formality of saying, I don't care. And we need to get back to the real conversations. Take out all the fluff. You know, everybody has a story, but the question is, who's willing to open up and share their story their own way? Not somebody saying you got to speak like this, or you got to speak like this, you got to act like this, you got to, no. Mm-hmm. Are you going to tell your story your own way? And so when I started speaking, I would hear a lot about, you know, Akeem, you can't do it like that. I said, what do you mean I can't do it like that? Like the way that you speak, you know, with this passion and this aggression and this. I said, if I'm not going to get excited about my life when I speak, then I probably shouldn't be doing this. And this is coming from a person where I don't like being in the spot. I was the person in school who would, like, I know class started at 8:30 and I still would go at 8:35. You know, but I hated opening up the door and everybody staring at you. I hated that. But I think when God puts a purpose in your heart, you have to look beyond your fears and look beyond the things that make you feel small. Because we feel small in our own minds a lot of the time before the world tries to say things, you know. And I think when we embark on the purpose that God put in us, our fears aren't as loud.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I hope that every single person who's listening has got some of these nuggets, you know, get up, show up, keep showing up. Don't stop. Don't quit. Every time you wake up in the morning and you push through the hard stuff, you're one step ahead. That's what I always get from any time I listen to you. You're one step ahead, you know. Do you know your gift? Mm-hmm. It's not your talent. Your talent is only one part of you, but who are you? And what's that one thing that's driving your life? And that's what I call culture creating. Mm. And we're all culture creators. Not one person can say, I'm just a mom, or I'm just a teacher, or I'm just a 13-year-old kid. Mm-hmm. No way. We've all got something. And thank you for reminding of that us that today. I think you're just an amazing person. You got to follow Akeem on Instagram. You'll be inspired there too. Akeem, can you spell your name for everybody?
Akeem, A-K-E-E-M.
And then Haynes, right?
H-A-Y-N-E-S.
Yes. Check him out on Instagram. Follow this guy because he's saying good stuff. If you have kids, your kids need to be following this guy because he's saying good stuff for our youth. And I just want to say thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Connie. You know, when you sent me the message, it was just a matter of when, you know, when you want to do it. You know, I'll always answer your call because you've answered so many calls. You know, so for me, I'm just grateful to be a part of it. And the studio is nice.
Yeah, we wish you could see it. And we wish you could see the amazing guy, Jarrett, sitting in the room here.
Putting in work.
Putting in the work, talking about showing up. Well, thank you guys for listening. And today, it's about what can you create? Mm-hmm. What can you create? Be a rebel. Don't just follow the crowd. Go forward and create something beautiful. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.